Hello and welcome to the latest Brewing Podcast, where we are delighted to be able to bring you an exclusive interview with another major force in politics, and this time with former Conservative Party leader and Brexit campaigner Ian Duncan Smith. Indeed, our conversation is one that is solely dedicated to Brexit, questioning how the Irish border issues may yet be overcome, the risks surrounding a collapse in the political processes, either domestically or in Brussels, and what the end game might look like. First up, however, we asked Ian about his expectations for the Chequers proposal, and here is what he had to say.
I believe that Chequers is pretty much dead, and I think we need to move swiftly to free trade.
OK, for more detail behind that position, as well as the others highlighted, please keep listening. But first, here are our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone, welcome to the latest podcast, and in a real coup for the series at the Portfolio Advisor Autumn Conference, we've managed to secure 10 minutes with the keynote speaker, the Right Honourable Ian Duncan Smith, MP, a name familiar to you I'm sure, but certainly his role and his contribution to the campaign to take the UK out of the European Union has propelled him to prominence again, and no surprises then, we want to talk about Brexit in this podcast. I guess my opening question would be, you know, what do you think the life expectancy of the Chequers plan is?
Well, I think the main thing is that I never thought Chequers would survive the first encounter with the European Union, and it turns out that's the case. The European Union doesn't want it. I can understand why, because they think it gives privileged access to the single market without any of the commitment on the four freedoms. And they also don't like the fact that financial services is outside of the agreement, which, of course, France doesn't want because they want financial services bound in. So all of that makes it difficult for them, and it's difficult for us because I think we're voted to leave and we're now talking about being half back in again, taking rules, being a rule taker, not a rule maker. And with the Court of Justice ruling on these things, then that is the critical issue. So my answer is it's already, in a sense, been pronounced a kind of zombie agreement. The question is really, will it be put back in its box? I think in the next week and a half, we're going to move steadily towards free trade as the real option. I think the EU has already expressed their desire to see that discussion. We need to say to them, you can only have that discussion if it's UK-wide, not leaving Northern Ireland out. And once that is resolved, and they know that if we don't resolve that, then we go to WTO, which will damage Ireland significantly. Then in that case, we can make it quite happily. We can actually get this done. I didn't say it's easy, but we will get a good free trade deal. People refer to it as Canada, but I think always that's a bit misleading because it's not really Canada. Canada is an agreement between two entities that start from very different positions. We start exactly aligned, so we have a very, very different process to go through, but one that I think we can make really good, and that's exactly, as I say, what Monsieur Barnier said. So I'm optimistic. I believe that Chequers is pretty much dead, and I think we need to move swiftly to free trade.
So a pivot towards free trade, and I guess the CETA type arrangement, in its our understanding of it, requires a little bit more onerous checks in terms of various borders. So the standard response is, well, how does one overcome the Irish border situation in a free trade arrangement?
Well, first of all, you don't need checks at the border. You don't need a hard border. And by the way, this is not just for Northern Ireland. The head of the World Customs Organization, Mr. Carlson, a Swedish individual, who is responsible for the borders with Norway, etc., he has made it absolutely clear there is no need whatsoever for any hard borders anywhere in Europe. The technology exists already just to be able to make sure that all exports and imports are registered before they enter, so they're all logged before they go, that each of those who operates registers what they do, and that that therefore is what their trade is, where they're sending stuff over the border or whatever. You can do that well behind the border. You do it essentially online, or you you have what's called a trusted trader scheme, which is already in existence now, and you actually bring that into effect. So there's no need for a border. We already have a border, by the way, on tax, on currency, on VAT, you know, and on security between North and South Ireland, but we don't have a hard border. And these are very big issues, so we already manage that. We can manage the trade bit. And by the way, that should be the same kind of border between Calais and Dover and Zeebrugge and all these others, that we allow, therefore, that to be the flexibility. So minimum friction. You know, the second thing is we do spot checks already on incoming trade. So the UK does 4% spot checks. Actually, Switzerland does 1%. Ireland only does 1%. So there's a variable on that. But that's what you do. You spot check stuff that you've been declared or checked and you want to go and see it. You check it away from the border. I think in Holland, they have a special place for when it comes to Rotterdam. It's about 25 kilometers back. If they're going to spot check, they spot check back there. They don't do it at the border. So this idea there'll be massive queues and everything else, there's absolutely no reason why that should be the case at all. So you can get a free trade deal. By the way, the reason I say Canada is not a good example of what it is, it's because there's been a Japanese trade deal which is now ratified at the moment. You've got other deals in South Korea, etc. So all of these all have slightly different elements, and we'd have a very different kind of element, but it would be a free trade deal.
Well, I guess another question mark over the whether you can keep the border fluid, as you say, is that it's at the moment we have regulatory alignment, and Brexit is a vote for divergence, and therefore, if you do move away in terms of, you know, regulation, then that may require, you know, a greater deal of scrutiny of goods, you know, crossing the border, does it not?
Yeah, I think there are areas where you are unlikely to see much divergence. Quite a lot of these areas are international standards. People talk about agriculture, but quite a lot of agricultural standards are things that are on an international basis. The Codex Alimentarius that deals with issues that the Europe claims is theirs is not theirs. It's an international agreement. So a lot of these things anywhere settled outside of Europe, and standards therefore will remain high. There may be slightly different interpretations. In the areas where regulations may change, then you have a process. That process is that you have an arbitrary body that arbitrates between the two and looks at the regulations. So if we're going to change something, reduce it, change it, modify it, or do something different. Europe may have a view on that. They're able to go to the arbitration point and say that causes us a problem, so we will have to do the following things. So you talk about it. It's the process of a trade arrangement. You can diverge, but you talk about how you manage that divergence. So the idea of this being a sort of cold, hard process where no one talks to each other is simply not the case. Free trade, though, is the right way to go, and the hidden burdens of regulation change. There are things we will want to change. I mean, there are things, I think, in the chemicals industry which are damaging to them, which are very difficult regulations. Financial services, things like MiFID and solvency have really imposed massive cost burdens on financial services. Our financial services are mostly global, so they need to compete, so they need to be, in a sense, light-touch regulation. And I think that's the right way to go. And the European Union relies on London to be successful, so the more successful we are, the better it is for them. 60% of their capital, I think, is raised in London, and so on and so forth. So my general view is, all things considered, if people are practical and reasonable about this, we should be able to reach what is, I think, a pretty good agreement, but providing it's a free trade agreement, not one where we still remain half in the EU.
Okay, my final question on the Irish border solution.
Yep.
That type of sort of permeable border suggests there would be sort of light touch regulation over immigration. Is that going to be a concern for the UK electorate or?
No, I always said we need controlled migration here much better. But my view is you control it at the point of work, not at the point of the border so much. So, for example, we've always had a common travel area with Southern Ireland. We've always treated the Southern Irish, the Irish government, the people from Ireland, the same as UK. So we're not talking about any new changes to that. They would have exactly the same rights as they have at the moment, because that's always been the historical thing with Ireland and the UK. But we need to control what I call low-level, very low-skilled migration into the UK, because that has caused distortions, both industry, which has failed to invest in training enough because it's been so addicted to cheap labour, and that the figures now demonstrate that. And the second thing is, you know, the pressures on communities when you have very large-scale migration in these areas where people come and go and they cause issues and difficulties because just the scale of it. So you need to control that, but the way to control that is through work. So you deal with access to work, which is the reason they're coming over, so work permits, and what you do is you say, look, at the low-skilled end, you need to know that there aren't British people that can do those jobs, and are they paying the right rate? So the second bit is to do with benefits. At the moment, somebody coming over from the European Union can claim all the benefits, which means that a lot of businesses are giving them very cheap, low-priced jobs, because they know they top those up through benefits. And that's a cost to the taxpayer. I think in the last financial year that I saw, I think the cost to the British taxpayer was $4.5 billion in subsidies to people mostly coming from the accession countries in Eastern Europe. So my question is, I'd have no problem somebody coming to a job if there's just nobody able to do that job here, but I do think that job needs to be paid a living wage and not reliant on British taxpayers to subsidise it. If that's the case, we're on a level playing field. And that's what I'm after. I'm after a level playing field for people who are committed here with housing and with schooling and all that, aren't competing with groups of people that are coming over who have none of those commitments and therefore take a very low salary and moonlight and do other things. That becomes a problem. So controlling it at the point of work is how you want it. You want people to come on holidays. You want pensioners to come, spend their money. That's not a problem to me. You know, people travelling back and forwards, I think that's the right way. The right way to control it is at the point of work, which is where all the problems have been.
Okay, and then the final part of this this podcast would be about execution. Clearly, there's a timing issue to get that free trade. Not least, we need to see the pivot towards the free trade approach, but we need to get a deal done by the end of March. Do you think there is going to be perhaps sort of some open-ended arrangements? We'll sort some of these parts, you know, the trusted trader schemes, you know, we'll get that over the line during the transition period, so that it'll be maybe a little lighter on detail than you would have liked when you get the deal done by the end of March?
Well, I think you wouldn't get a whole free trade arrangement settled before the end of March, and I wouldn't expect you to. And by the way, anyway, you couldn't sign it up, because we can't sign a trade arrangement with the EU until we've left, and vice versa. So anyway, we'd have to leave. So what you'd look to do is to agree, therefore, that this is where you're going. You'd want to have all the areas that are up for grabs there very clearly and issues spelled out. In each of those, what are the things that we have to settle and resolve? Those are all spelled out. What the objective of it is, and then basically you will then you go to your implementation phase to complete that, because you would have to do that anyway afterwards. You take your process into that period. We've left, but now we're discussing this, and in the implementation phase, you continue to stay with the existing process. And then when you leave into the free trade arrangement, which is how you want to do it. But the key thing is to get the agreement that that's where you're going. This is how you're going to do it. These are the areas you need to discuss. Here's the detail of what we're going to settle. Here is where our principal project is meant to aim to go. And on that basis, then, that's good enough, I think, to vote in the Commons on this is what we want. Goes through, we leave anyway, and then you can have this implementation phase. Otherwise, we don't have an implementation phase. We go to WTO and the EU doesn't get their money.
Well, I was just sort of asking that question on the basis that, the phrase was nothing's agreed until everything's agreed. Yep. I wonder if we get to the end of March and there is some speculation over, you know, the direction of travel of some of the detail, i.e. it's not, you know, finalised, dotted I's, crossed T's, yet we've committed to paying that $39 billion and therefore maybe some of our leverage has gone to get, you know, the negotiations finalised in the right
manner. No, you don't commit to paying that money until you've agreed the trade arrangement.
So the $39 billion is not set in stone as a payment as of the end of March. Mm. That is, you know, that.
Well, it's a payment that's set in stone insofar as we reach all the elements of the agreement. If we don't reach the agreement, then we aren't paying the money over. That's the deal, and that's, I think, Dominic Raab made that clear the other day. So, if nothing is agreed, we don't have a payment. If we agree to do something but we don't reach that, we don't have a payment. But if we agree to do something and we get it done within the timetable, the EU can get its money.
Okay, my final question, and I know you're very pressed for time, would be, you know, if you get this arrangement as you see it, as you want, what do you think the free trade arrangement with sufficient detail, and it came back to Parliament, you know, to the sort of rebels or remainers in the Conservative Party, you know, what would be the consequences of them voting against that type of... Because I'm sure there's no deal out there that would satisfy them, but what would you think would be the consequences, perhaps for the government, perhaps for the leadership, if they voted in such numbers that the deal was rejected?
Well, if they wanted to reject a free trade arrangement, then I think they would put themselves at odds with the rest of the country, because that's what the country would very happily settle for. And I'm not sure that they will, by the way, because I think it is the best that we will get. It's the best that Europe will have to offer. It's the best that we're able to offer. And it achieves the things that we're after, which is to get a good trading relationship with them so that our goods and services can all travel across the channel and be used over there and vice versa. But I don't see what the logic would be to change that. Chequers is a different matter altogether. I can understand why people don't want Chequers, because it doesn't deliver on the vote. But this delivers on the vote, but also at the same time makes sure we have an incredibly good relationship with Europe. So my answer to those that say, oh, I'm not sure about that, is, well, I don't know what you want, because if we don't have that, you say you don't want to go to WTO, that's where we go. And then they're saying, oh, well, we'll have another vote. You're not going to have another vote. That's done. So what you'll be doing is voting for WTO. Now, personally, I think we'll be fine in WTO. You know, we will be there. It'll be essentially up to us then how we set our own rules and tariffs, etc., and we'll be able to do trade deals with other countries. But my key thing is, I think it's best to have a good relationship with Europe, so that's why I want a free trade deal, and then we can go do trade deals with America, who's desperate to do one. The Trans-Pacific Partnership has said that they're like to do it. NAFTA is now saying they want to sign us into NAFTA, and Australia, New Zealand, and other countries, India too, are all saying, right, we're up, let's go. So our problem is going to be getting it done, because there's so many that want to do it. But I have to tell you, Azevedo, who runs the WTO, World Trade Organization, is desperate to have us back in as a voting member. We're a member, but we don't have a vote, so we gave that up to the European Union. Because, you know, he said, and others have said, the UK is the best free trading country in the world. We believe in it passionately. We were the origins of free trade. Having us back voting will help enormously persuade those who are sliding from it not to slide from it. And so he's dead keen to have us back, and I'm dead keen to be there again. It's where we should have been, never have left it.
Well, to close out, I mean, even in that answer, you've given a lot of optimistic... Yep. Delivered a lot of optimism about sort of yep. global trade deals we can get attached ourselves to. But, you know, you must have lots of connections into Europe. I just wanted to get your sense of optimism that if we do pivot to this free trade arrangement, that you think that can get over the line. You really think that can be achieved?
I'm only going by what I hear. And Monsieur Barnier, Monsieur Tusk, and Juncker have all said in the last 3 weeks we should be talking about free trade. And my answer is, take their hand that's offering free trade and say, look, we'll do the deal. We'll negotiate a deal, but you need to start by recognizing Northern Ireland is not a problem. If you accept that, and if you say we can resolve that matter, and there's been a very good paper published by the European Research Group, which shows that even without any new technology, there is no reason for a hard border. If you can accept all of that, then don't let that stand in the way of a really good arrangement between the UK and the EU. And if they're ready to do a deal, that's where they'll go. And the rest is negotiation. And I'm content that we will achieve something then, but they have to tell us that that's what they're prepared to do. If they don't like Chequers, they've said they don't, then okay, let's do the free trade deal, but you have to come somewhere along the line, otherwise we can't do the deal.
Okay, well, thank you so much for sparing the time. We know you're a busy man. We wish you all the best in your efforts to drive Theresa May towards that free trade arrangement. It does certainly look more appealing than the Chequers arrangement. To our listeners, thanks very much for listening. Let us know what you think on iTunes, referencing hashtag Brewing Podcast, or leave a review through whatever platform you listen to this podcast on. But until next time, many thanks for listening. And once again, thank you to Ian Duncan-Smith.
Pleasure. Thank you.